Hi, everybody. I'm Mike M. I'm your chairperson. I want to welcome you to the Arizona Area Turbocharger Recovery Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona Area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to help members take their recovery to the next level, or at least up a notch. We'll open with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And I have asked Patrick B. if he would read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Patrick. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic at pass.
Thank you, Patrick. I've asked Beth to read our workshop opening.
Thank you. My name is Beth. Our first Al-Anon meeting gave many of us a feeling of hope and the realization that we were not alone. Hearing such slogans as "Easy Does It" and "One Day at a Time" helped us to see that there had been others before us who understood what we had lived through. It was a struggle in the beginning to focus on anything except the alcohol. But gradually, as we attended more meetings and began to listen, we found it easier to break through our barrier of denial to concentrate on what other members were saying. As more time passed, we were able to widen our focus and look at our group. We wanted to ensure that our group continued to flourish in a happy manner. When we heard about the 12 traditions and what they meant to group unity, we came to realize that most of the time our group was practicing the traditions. Like the 12 steps, the traditions began to seem familiar. Their wisdom was applicable to our group and to our own personal lives. Some of us were in Al-Anon or Al-Ateen for years before we ever heard about the 12 concepts of service. At this point in all our recovery, many of us could think clearly most of the time, keep an open mind some of the time, and allow others to give their opinions occasionally. After considering these ideas, it is but a small step further for us to wonder if the concepts play a useful part in our group's lives. The answer is yes. Whether a group is flourishing well or beset by problems, the concepts provide a vital link to the service experiences of others. Once again, we realize that we are not alone. Others have experienced similar problems and met them with understanding and compassion. And those are excerpts from the concepts, Al-Anon's Best Kept Secret, copyright Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, 1986 and 2000.
Thank you very much, Beth. Really appreciate that. And now I've asked Anne to read our section from When I Get Busy, I Get Better on fear of failure and fear of success. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Glad to be of service. Fear of failure, fear of success. The fear of failure. Sometimes responsibility brings up a fear more disconcerting than that of simply making mistakes. The fear of failure. What if I forgot my story when it's my turn to share? What if I lose our literature, break our coffee pot, alienate my group, or lose our treasury? Alcoholism has given me a high level of creativity when left to my own devices to spin fantasies of disaster. What I learned through Al-Anon service is that others want to see me succeed. Certainly, my higher power is always with me and always willing to encourage my success. My group, too, supports my efforts. I've also learned that the fate of my group doesn't rest in my hands, but rather in the hands of a higher power who is not me. Help is always available. Fear of success. What if I volunteered to help out and succeeded? I didn't want to feel responsible for the welfare of my group. What if I began to dominate the affairs of my group or became distracted from my own recovery by our deliberations about business? And I might not lose a healthy sense of humility if people started looking to me for guidance. My fear of success sprang from my experience with alcoholism and feeling that doing a job well meant sacrificing my own happiness. I discovered in Al-Anon that my fear of dominance was a good guarantee I wouldn't be domineering, and that taking a hand in group affairs furthered my own recovery instead of derailing it. I also discovered that I could grow in self-esteem without losing humility. I could enjoy making a contribution without feeling that I alone could provide guidance. Most important, in helping others, as in the rest of my program, Al-Anon urged me to let go. Part of extending a hand is eventually letting go and noticing that when my job is done, there are more hands willing and able to carry on. And that's from When I Got Busy, I Got Better, pages 5-6. Copyrighted by Al-Anon Family Groups Headquarters, Incorporated in 1994.
Thank you. I want to thank you, Patrick and Beth and Anne, for helping us get started. So each of our three panelists will be sharing for 15 minutes. And the rest of the time we'll use for your questions and possibly a few brief shares. Remember, any shares are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona area or Al-Anon as a whole. Now, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who's Andrew M. Andrew is just has a lot of energy, has been really well involved since I've known him in Al-Anon, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Andrew? Take it away.
Good evening, I'm Andrew, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. And in spite of Mike's introduction, I feel very much a newbie. But and this is an awareness that I have deepened just recently in the last 2 or 3 months, that fears really have been a central part of my life, and fears of success, fears of failure, and even fearing both of them at the same time, which is a talent. In the opening reading, it's mentioned that in Al-Anon, I realized that I was not alone. And for me, belonging is what has assuaged most of my fears. Participation in Al-Anon and more recently service has indeed shown me how I have overcome the lack of connection in my life. So a bit of background. In my case, fear came from neglect from very young and during most of my life. I was alone, surrounded by people. For example, I have no real memories of my mother. By all accounts, she was not into motherhood, and her alcoholism kept her in the hospital from when I was 4 until she passed away 3 years later of alcoholism. Then I grew up with my father, who only managed to drink himself to death 6 years ago, But to my credit, I did cease all contact with him about 20 years before that. And I have no regrets about that. In my view, my parents both committed suicide. Through my childhood and then my adulthood, though things looked pretty good from the outside, I understood from very early on that my father didn't have interest or really care about me. When my mother passed away at 7, my father decided we would move to Mexico. I spoke Spanish at the time, and I did okay in Mexican schools. But there was no doubt left in my mind that my minority voice was not to be heard. As time passed, I didn't find relatives and other people that I trusted or that seemed to care. And that neglect and that lack of belonging, of course, led to all kinds of fears. It led to my not having initiative or self-confidence. And also it led to my trying to earn people's care, leaving me with wonderful codependent habits that I'm still battling with. I was broken. And even in adulthood, that did not mend. To illustrate, sometime in my 30s, on a whim, my father decided that I should exhume my mother's body and have it cremated because he decided he wanted her ashes. Even though I was appropriately horrified, I did it. So when I say I was broken, in the sense that one breaks a horse to be able to put a saddle on it and ride. And it's not clear to me how that happened also. I find that interesting. Some people are broken in that sense by traumatic events. And mine was very surreptitious. The happy ending is that I managed to survive all that. I now have two beautiful adopted daughters, and I have a functional family. Thank you all for being here tonight. In my looking back, I would say it's hope and curiosity that got me through. I was deeply embarrassed by my father, by his laziness and hypocrisy and alcoholism and how manipulative of myself and everyone else he was. And it was a big force in my life that I didn't want to be any of those things. And it seemed that I could imagine accomplishing that, which is the hope, and the curiosity that I could maybe pull that off. My recovery has had a lot to do with changing my attitudes towards those fears and the damage done by all those experiences. Growing my program, and more recently in service, it is very clear to me how Al-Anon and service have helped me dissipate the fears and the mess that had been my life. Here, I no longer lack connection. My habits of inaction are not triggered. I feel belonging, so I don't need to try to do it. I feel cared for. And I even feel that I may be worth it. So my fears are indeed undone in service. I used to cry over certain lyrics that made me think that someday I would make it to a less fearful life. And now I cry happy tears when we read pages 267 to 268 of Survival to Recovery, because I can see myself moving to that place of safety. As when I started out, I've only been at this seriously for 4 years. I am comfortable with the path of recovery that I've taken. And it has seemed smooth and reasonable to me. The two noticeable transitions as I look back were getting a sponsor, which I think is probably a transition for everybody, and then moving into service beyond the meeting. Initially, I think, as we all did, I was focused on figuring things out, on doing 90 and 90, and the whole sponsor thing. And in particular, it seemed to me that no one has been helpful in my life thus far, and now I'm supposed to get a sponsor. How's that going to make a difference? At least that was what was going through my head at the time. I had to find someone who had what I wanted, and I'm scratching my head going, I don't know what I want. How am I going to find someone that has what I wanted? It took some time. But I'm here. I have gone through those transitions. And even after I was settled in with a sponsor, I don't think that service beyond, putting books away came right away. I think I was timid more than it was an effort to make that transition. Also, I had various unpleasant experiences in service in my life. And I think if I had any trepidation here, it was because of that. So when I think of the frustration that, service is the solution to the fears that keep members from serving, I feel that. And even though I didn't seem to have that fear, I understand it. And I do, for example, I feel that cringing when I see service positions go unfilled. Yet it's part of the fabric that attraction, not promotion. There is no obligation, even though the Al-Anon Declaration kind of sounds like that, but there is no obligation here. So when I think of that frustration, I have to think that this is something that I cannot change, and I have to do the best to accept. I must say that in preparing for tonight, there were certain things that came to mind. For me, I have seen phone lists that go beyond names and numbers, and I find that inviting. I've seen phone lists that asterisked people who are interested in sponsoring, for example. I think that's a very encouraging thing. I going forward, when I announce AIS meetings or workshops, I'm going to preface it with some remark about why I enjoy that activity. Another thing that has come to the forefront in my mind is that I will feel more inclined going forward to ask people to help me with service tasks, even in small ways. But then when I thought about that, I thought, wow, that does sound so nicely passive manipulative, doesn't it? But as I look at back at how I got to tonight and how I got involved in service, it seems to me that it wasn't a transition, so to speak, because it seems to me that I talked to people after meetings or whatever, and they said, oh, you know, I'm having trouble with this. And I just said, hey, maybe I could help you with that. And before I know it, I'm involved in service. So it is more in the forefront of my mind to, I don't want to say rope people into service, but certainly open those doors for people to say, oh, maybe I could give you a hand with that. So I don't know where I am time-wise, but those are pretty much my thoughts for the evening. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. That was a great share. Let's give Andrew a nice round of applause with jazz hands. Thank you very much. Don't forget, if you have any questions for Andrew, to send a private chat to Maureen, who is waving her hand there. And you can do that by clicking on the three buttons that are up in the corner by her picture and send her a chat. Thank you again, Andrew. Appreciate that. Our next speaker is Debbie B. I have known Debbie B for quite a while, and I tell you, you just can't hold a good woman down. And she has just a great amount of service experience, and I can't wait to hear what she has to say. Debbie?
Thank you, Mike. Some people may say I should just step back and let other people do it, but I want to thank you for asking me to speak tonight and to increase my work on my recovery through this form of service. I am a little bit nervous, so I might wiggle a little in my seat. You know, it's easy to be in a little committee meeting, but it's kind of hard to be in front of, and I can only see a few of you. But so I'd like to start with my very first service position. I was about a year into Al-Anon when I was asked to be a group representative for a meeting that I attended regularly. And boy, did I think I was something when they asked me. I didn't even know what a group representative was, but I thought, I'm sure I can do that. And so I thought that made me the person in charge. And I was very proud to have landed that position. Little did I know that I landed the position because nobody else wanted to do it. And so I did my best to try and whip that group into shape. I didn't have any experience, strength, and hope to offer them, but I knew what we all should be doing to do things the Al-Anon way, even though I only had about a year in Al-Anon. I was too prideful to have any fear of failing at this job. That was the thing that I thought of when I read that thing about fear of failure. I thought, I didn't even have a clue that there was anything called failure. You just keep going and going and going. I am like the Energizer Bunny. You just keep going until finally you hit the wall, I guess. So fast forward to today, I have had many service positions, but in regards to being a group representative, I am currently a group representative to a meeting that I attend regularly. And I took it because the position had gone vacant for about a year. And I was working with my sponsors through the traditions and the concepts. And I realized that that group did not have a voice. It did not have a voice at assembly. It didn't get all the information it needed to get. And I talked to my sponsor and I said, I could do it for like the last year of the panel. So I took that position on. And I will say that I have a greater understanding of what a group representative does now. So what a difference 15 years of recovery made in my attitude, understanding, and growth from the recovering from the effects of alcoholism on my life. It seems to me that I was attracted to people in service early on. I went to my first assembly before I ever became the group representative. Some people that I regularly attended meetings with said, we're going down here for an assembly. Why don't you come with us? And, you know, I got in the car and I went. I didn't have a clue as to what I was going to. I do remember that the Friday night meeting, a trustee spoke about the qualities of what makes a good leader. And, you know, for some reason, I remember that. And when there have been opportunities where in our service manual, the on concept 9, where the qualities of a good leader laid out by Bill W. in his speech, it just brings that right back to me. It was a voting assembly, and I didn't have a clue when they said, who would like to stand for this position? And people literally stood up. I was like, what are they doing? But what I really enjoyed, the part of that whole scenario, was the fellowship. And Andrew kind of talked about it, that sense of being a part of something. I had been a part of lots of different things in my life, but I never felt like I belonged. I never felt like I belonged in my own family sometimes. And so this was an opportunity for me to feel a part of. I didn't do it all right. I certainly didn't do it perfectly, but I jumped into that service pool and I've enjoyed it, that camaraderie and feeling a part of something greater than myself. I have had many service models in my past to learn from. And I'm grateful for all of those that have gone before and for those I've interacted with that have shown me things that I didn't have any experience with. Members, I think about currently my sponsor is talking to me about taking on an area, possibly taking on an area position for the next panel. And I tell you, she makes some suggestions that I think, I don't even see myself as doing that, you know. But she is encouraging and she must see something in me that I don't see in myself. And that kind of at least gets me moving to make out my service resume. And I've been talking to somebody else about service and I've decided that I would, you know, pray about, make my service resume, put it out there, and then just let God handle what position I should be in. And that's a far cry from raising my hand and saying, yeah, I'll be your group representative. I haven't a clue as to what's going on. But I have been encouraged so much by other people who have encouraged me in the different roles and service that I've had. After that first GR position, I moved to a different state. And I had been, since I had been involved in service and had gone to district meetings, and I moved to the next state that I lived in, their positions were already filled because it was in the middle of their panel. And boy, was I missing service. And I remember it was about a year after I was there, one of the GR from the group representative from my group said to me, we need a ISR, which is an information service representative. We think you'd make a good service representative. And I said, okay. I didn't know what that position was. And I went to the meetings and I learned what that position was. And then I was so enthralled with serving in that position that I served on their board for 2 years as the telephone answering service coordinator. So it just seemed like things just kind of flowed for me. Let me see. But the one thing I had not learned in that position as the telephone service coordinator was to ask for help. I thought I could do it all by myself. After all, that's what I was taught as a child. If you wanted something done, do it, you know? And so it was very hard for me, and it took me years to be able to ask somebody to help me or to ask for volunteers to help be a part of my committee. That was a real hard thing for me because I thought then I'd be in charge. And what if it doesn't work out? You know, they'll blame me. You know, I don't want to be blamed. The reading talked about fantasies of disaster. One of my biggest thing that I learned, that fantasies of disaster are all in my head. Our district hosted a delegates day here in Arizona, and I had volunteered to be the chairperson of the food committee. But, and I did all the planning, I got volunteers and everything was going. And then the day of delegates day, a family commitment took me out of town. And I said to the chairperson, the district representative, I can't be there. She said, that's okay. You've got everything organized. God's in charge. And I kept saying, yeah, but I can't be there. I can't be there. What, you know? And I was so worried. I worried the whole time I was gone that there would not be any food or there wouldn't be enough. People would complain. They would blame the chair, which would be me. And the whole event would be ruined because there wasn't enough food. Well, as soon as I got back into town, I did call the district rep and I asked how things went. And she said, oh, it went fine. And then I tentatively asked her, was there enough food? She says, oh my gosh, we had so much food. Oh, people were taking it home. And I was just like, I was so relieved because I was so afraid that I would be banned from being on any other committee because I had ruined that delegate's day. In my current position as a convention chair, I'm still prone to think that the worst is going to happen. But with a little more experience and recovery, I have learned during this time to try to rely on my higher power whenever I start to go down that path where my mind starts thinking everything's going to fall apart and it's going to be the worst convention anybody's ever had. I have to remember that I'm not in charge, that my higher power is. Let's see, fear of success. I don't have as much experience with this as I do with the fear of failure. So I talked previously about my issues with thinking that was because I was like this, why that first group wanted me as their group representative. I wasn't humble at all. I still at times think this way. Over and over in one of my meetings that I attend regularly, I hear, we are all equals. And I have to remember that. I was doing some work on concept 11, which talks about that the even the World Service World Service Office has different committees that help run Al-Anon. So we don't do it on our own, and we each do our part. That's not what I learned growing up. I learned that if you behaved, you were treated better. If you rebelled, which was me, and tried to do things differently, you were chastised. And so being humble was to behave and give to others first. And then today I listened to Courage to Change on audiobook. So I never know, I have to listen real carefully when I hear something that is that I like, because I never know what day of the month it is. But it was May 5th, which was yesterday, and it was talking about humility. And this is something that I'll read this from that. I began to learn humility when I take the first step. By admitting I'm powerless, I make room for the possibility that a power greater than myself can do all those things that are beyond my reach. In other words, I begin to learn about what is and what is not my responsibility. That has been a big lesson that I have learned in doing service. I used to think either I was wholly responsible or everybody else was responsible. And if they didn't do it right, I could blame them. But I've learned that in any kind of service commitment I have my part to do, and other people have their part to do. This convention commitment that was supposed to be a year, by the time it's over with, will be 2 years. And I am really looking forward, not for it to being over, because I've learned so much about myself during this time, but because I want that feeling of completion after a job is done, whether it turns out disastrous or whether it turns out great. I just know that I have done the best I can. And everybody on the committee has done the best they can. And that's one way that I try and encourage people. I was in a committee meeting just recently related to the convention, and this one person had lots and lots of questions. And I said, we don't know all the answers yet. They're going to be revealed as we move forward. I said, so everybody is just doing their best. And to me, that is what I think about service. Is I make a commitment to do a job. In Al-Anon, always there are guidelines and there's a service manual to follow to show me what that job entails. I know that now. I didn't know that in the beginning. And then all I have to do is do it to the best of my ability. I can ask for help. I can say, I don't know what I'm doing, and somebody will help me. I can always rely on my higher power. And I have found that more often than not, in these service roles, I learn something that is important for me to learn about myself that I couldn't have learned any other way. So I am 100% in with service. So if anybody is scared about taking on a service position, talk to me. I'll tell you, it's not that bad, especially in Al-Anon. Everybody loves you despite what you do. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Debbie. Let's give her a nice round of applause. Excellent share. Really appreciate that. And remember, if you do have any questions for Debbie or for Debbie and Andrew, please send those to Maureen in a private chat, and she will have those ready for our question and answer period. Our third speaker tonight is Hannah T. I've served on some committees with Hannah T. I've certainly heard her speak in a couple of venues and heard her share at meetings, and I always come away with a deeper understanding of the program after I hear her speak. So Hannah, all yours.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Hannah. Wow. Thank you, everyone, for being here and for inviting me to speak. The the first paragraph about the fear of failure, I'm very familiar with that. And this one sentence, alcoholism has given me a high level of creativity when left to my own devices to spin fantasies of disaster. And I thought when I read that, fantasies of disaster, that was like the first 30 plus years of my life. You know, that don't need any help there. And, you know, because I learned so much in my family of origin through being affected by the disease of alcoholism, that mistakes were unacceptable. And if I made a mistake, it meant I am a mistake. There was no separation between guilt and shame. And when I made a mistake, punishments were harsh. They were way harsher than the actual transgression. And also another thing is the rules changed every day. You know, one day it's this, the next day it changes and there's broken promises. So I never could believe what people would say. So when I got into Al-Anon, for the first 2 years, I didn't want to do anything. I was in a lot of pain and a lot of fear. So the first 2 years, I wouldn't even put my name on a phone list. I didn't want people calling me. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to be responsible. What if I ruin their life? Or after they talk to me, they jump off a cliff, you know, because I am that powerful, you know? So it took me a long time. I want to say it was almost 2 years until I could lead a meeting. And that's just reading the opening script. And then my very first service position was group treasurer, and my sponsor held that position and she encouraged me to take it over. And I had a lot of help from her. So I was really grateful, but very scared, because again, mistakes are unacceptable. And what will happen if I make a mistake? I will be excommunicated from Al-Anon, fantasy of disaster, right? And it says in this paragraph too, in Fear of Failure, what I learned through Al-Anon service is that others want me to succeed. And that was just like, what? No, they don't. They say they do, but they don't. You know, because I can't believe anything anyone says. And that sentence just didn't end that way. It was like, others want to see me succeed blank. Like, they want to see me succeed so they can get something from me later. Or they want to see me succeed not. They want to be entertained by my failure. You know, it was just so, it's so martyr, victim, yet arrogant, because it's all about me and my fear and what people are going to do to me, think about me, you know, and so on and so on. Anyway, as a group treasurer, I did make a big mistake. I didn't handle the money well. Boundaries were blurred with the literature person. And after some time found that the treasury was in the red. And I had to do the scariest thing and admit that in a business meeting to the group and make amends and say, this is the solution that I chose to fix this problem. And no one yelled at me. No one shamed me. No one was violent towards me. No one was, you know, giving the cold shoulder, like the silent treatment. We talk about the violence of silence as a way of punishment. No one gossiped as far as I know. No one said, hey, I heard you really goofed up. And that was very weird. It felt like I was in an alternative universe, like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, it's so quiet. Why isn't anyone shaming me? But they're letting me stay on as treasurer. It was very strange, but also very refreshing. And that was how I could then just begin to trust that maybe these people are meaning what they say, that it's okay to make a mistake in the service position, that you won't be, you know, excommunicated from the program. And it was such an amazing experience. And that was my first service position. And so therefore, Al-Anon has been a place for me to grow with healthy consistency and a very safe place to learn. And then moving on to the second section, which is the fear of success. I don't know what the heck that is. What is fear of success? Come on. I mean, maybe if I get put to the test someday, I'll understand. But, you know, I'm always, you know, and I'm just so fixated on the fear of failure that this is just something that seems very foreign to me. So this part where it says I could grow in self-esteem without losing humility. I can enjoy making a contribution without feeling that I alone could provide guidance. So I chose to kind of concentrate on question 3, where it says, please share on how awareness, acceptance, and action has allowed me to be both more self-aware of my 4-step obstacles and still contribute to Al-Anon. And since my recovery is about healing and my humility is about being teachable, I can still contribute to Al-Anon without being perfect. And probably some of the character defects or the distorted beliefs that I carried and probably still carry to a degree today, but I'm much better with. Number one is, if I don't do it, no one will. And I, you know, I'll do it for all the most unhealthy motives, to people please, to get self-esteem from you, to stroke my ego, whatever. Also, the other distorted belief is, well, if I'm good at it, obviously I should be the one doing it. And of course, again, there's that fear of failure. I don't want to try something that I haven't done before, that I'm not an expert in or have some experience in already. And I also found that as a newcomer, there were people that I heard of and knew that held service positions for like 10 years. And I was like, why? I didn't understand that. But then I guess I could, because if someone gets real comfortable in a position, it just, you know, why leave? And then if you have people in the group that are fine with that, like, we're comfortable with her being in that position for 10 years. You know, my sponsors told me that's part of the disease too. Not only, it is a form of domination. You're dominating a service position more than is appropriate. And, you know, domination, as it says in the service manual, is one of the 3 obstacles to success in Al-Anon, along with discussion of religion and gossip. But what I did not realize that there's like this, you know, when domination is really like forcing you to do something you don't want to do, it's quote bad. But if domination is, oh, she's going to hold that service position for 10 years and everyone else is going to sit back and let her do that, that's also a form of domination as well. So, which brings me to a very important part is a very wonderful, I think, super wise concept of our program is the rotation of service. And there's a person in a meeting that says, part of sharing is sharing the time as a way of don't dominate the meeting by talking for 20 minutes when there's other people who could share too. And, you know, you can replace the word time with service. So part of sharing is sharing the service, like letting others experience that opportunity to grow and give back and give those people, like my sponsor gave me the dignity to try a service position. I think group treasurer is a really good newcomer position. So, you know, part of sharing is sharing the service. And, you know, service has become very important. It helps me. For me, I feel like my motives are pretty clear when I'm doing a service position. I want to do it to pay it forward. I want to do it to for my own recovery, but also help others as well and support this spiritual program, which has given so much to me. And I will just close with a story of when I was a newcomer. One of my friends, back before program, he was against me being an Al-Anon. He thought it was a cult. He was telling me, you need to get out of there. And I would just be like, leave me alone. It's helping, you know, and he was still against it. And one time I was talking about how something like Assembly or Founders Day and talking about how what a wonderful experience it was for me and how it really inspired me and how, you know, we go out with groups of people and we do this together, we do that together. And then he said to me, oh, so Al-Anon is really more of a social club. You're not one of those fanatics that like work those steps. And I was like, oh no, I'm that fanatic too. The social quote part is just the icing on the cake. And what I have to remember is the primary spiritual purpose. And yes, I can get diverted into other parts of the program. Like the first time I came to Al-Anon, all I did was go to meetings. But to me, yes, I want to be that fanatic that works the steps, because if I'm working the steps, traditions, concepts, and studying them and applying them, that's the oxygen from the oxygen mask. So I can do service in a healthy way, not unhealthy way. So I can show up in my relationships, my employment in a healthy way instead of an unhealthy way. So I appreciate everything that was said. I'm just so grateful to be a part of this wonderful fellowship and grateful to be with you guys tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Let's give Hannah a nice round of applause. That was really appreciate your sharing tonight. And don't forget to send any questions you might have for Hannah or for Debbie or for Andrew to Maureen. And she will be bringing those up in just a minute. Let's give a nice round of applause for all three of our speakers tonight. Thank you again. And let's see, we appreciate you sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And now I'm going to turn over the rest of the meeting to our moderator, Maureen, so we can use that time for your questions and for any of the two-minute shares that we might have. Maureen?
Hey, everybody. Yeah, thanks. Those are great shares. Thank you so much for saying yes when you were asked to speak on this topic. I've got a few questions from our membership, and I will let you know who the question is for, and or if it's just open to all of you. So please keep your answers brief, a couple minutes or less, so we can answer as many questions as possible. If you are on the phone and have a question, you can use the *9 to raise your hand and lower your hand. Just let me know when I can call your name, and that's when you can unmute. So we still have time. If you want to send a question, don't hesitate to go ahead and do that if you would, if you have any questions for them. First thing I was going to ask is, what is the most important thing you've learned about yourself while serving in Al-Anon? And I'm going to ask that of all three of you. Debbie, would you like to go first?
Sure. Let's see. The most important thing that I have learned, I kind of shared in my talk, was that I'm responsible for me. That has been a revelation that has been unfolding in my life over the past couple of years in my recovery. Prior to that, I used to think that somebody else should be responsible. I didn't want to be responsible for me. And service has helped me to learn to be responsible. And just it just takes a different attitude or way of thinking for me to say, okay, I took on this responsibility. I need to work on it. So it's being responsible, taking on responsibility and being responsible to fulfill that job.
Okay. Thanks, Debbie. Hannah, would you like to answer that question next?
Sure. I would say one of the biggest things, like that was shared before, was learning to ask for help. That was just, you know, that's almost, well, that was considered weak. And there was a lot of stigma. I guess one of the things growing up was, you don't ask for help, you should be able to do it on your own. And it was tough, but I think service really kind of break that for me and rely on others to help. And it was so surprising for me to find that people were willing to help me. So I think that was the biggest thing that I had to break, a real deep habit of not asking for help.
Thanks, Hannah. Andrew, what have you got to add to that one?
I'm not sure. I think one thing, I suppose it has to do with responsibility, but dealing with being a trusted servant, I think I have been heretofore in the mindset that I'm jumping through hoops for XYZ person, and I go to them and it's like, did I do it right? And then I either get a good grade or a bad grade. And here I go to the person that I think is that person and I ask for feedback, and they go, well, you're the trusted servant. And I'm like, what, who, when, where? And I have to digest that and deal with it. And I'm still working on that. And that, I think that has been a form of responsibility that, I guess, again, that people trust me is new to me, and dealing with that and growing into that has been something that I've had to learn about myself. That's what stands out. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. And Andrew, this one's next one's for you. you in your when you were speaking, you said something about being timid, and I was wondering, how did the service help you become less timid, and which position helped you the most with this?
Yeah, that happened.
Well, how about we put it this way?
On that one, and actually, I have to admit that there are a lot of areas of service that just, wow, no, definitely not going there. Yeah, it's, I'm just sitting here. I feel that that's a complete work in progress. I still feel very timid. I trust that someday in the distant future that will be the case. I feel that that's something that's starting to work for me with what I've done, and I very much feel that I've, you know, barely started in service. So yeah, that's a hope for me.
Oh, awesome! Thanks for answering that one. Okay, it talked about the fantasies of disaster, and one of the listeners would like to know if you still have those fantasies of disaster, and what tools do you use today to get through those? Let's see, Hannah, would you like to go first?
Sure. Yes, I still get fantasies of disaster. I can't really think of any service related right now, but I have had some fantasies of disaster where I wanted to make an amends to someone from 30 years ago, which I tried to do that a month ago. And I had a lot of fantasies of disaster around that. You know, the internet has just ruined it for, you know, you can't just make living amends because it's too easy to find people now. But but what I did, and I know, I mean, I understand, okay, awareness, acceptance, action. And I was aware. I'm really stuck. I am scared to reach out, and yet I feel like I need to, and I needed to use my tools like I do for just anything that I need help on. I called my sponsor. I shared about it in meetings. I asked people in meetings for experience, strength, and hope. Mm-hmm. I prayed about it, put it in my God box. I, you know, waited. That's the thing. It's like, okay, I'm going to wait for the knowledge of God's will and the power to carry it out. And the answer did come to me in a meeting when a member shared a similar experience. And then he said, yeah, with my amends, I make them because I asked myself, how free do I want to be? And boom, that was my answer. All right, I'm going to do it. So I come to the program. I come to the program to address things now, fears, struggles, decisions.
Great. Thanks, Hannah. Let's see. Debbie, did you answer that? You kind of spoke about that in when you were sharing, but otherwise, how do you do it currently?
I still have those sometimes ideas that everything's going to be a disaster, especially with this ongoing convention committee. Mm-hmm. And usually now, because I realize I don't have the power, I'm powerless over the outcome. And so generally when my mind starts going in that direction, I just say, and I will say to myself, okay, Debbie, stop that. That's not in your realm. to be able to predict the future and just stop. And if I can catch myself like that, then I ask, you know, my higher power to help me just continue on doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing. And the results will be revealed later on. It's, you know, today I woke up with a, you know, I wasn't quite, didn't have my talk quite down. And so I had, you know, I was a little bit jumbled. And then of course the internet goes out and I, you know, at home, and the guy comes to fix it and he says, oh, it could take a couple of weeks. They got to dig up the street. And I am just like, no. And I just prayed and I just said, okay, if I'm supposed to be here tonight speaking, reveal to me how I'm supposed to do that. And I am at my sister's house using her internet tonight. So I thought I could use it as an excuse to call Mike and say, I can't make it. I have no internet. He's saying no. And then I, you know, my sister just popped into my head. She lives, you know, in my community, right, a couple of blocks away. So I just said, are you going to be home tonight? She said, no. I said, great, I'm using your house. So, you know, I could have gone to Fantasies of Disaster and made a mountain out of a molehill in the negative sense. But I just, you know, you just say a little prayer and you just take one step, put one foot in front of the other and just keep going until you hit the wall, and then you turn right or left and you keep going till you hit the next wall. And you just, you know, the whole time you're saying, guide me, show me, you know. So that's my answer. Thanks.
Thanks, Debbie. Oh, Andrew, I got a different question for you. Oh, you talked a little bit about encouraging others to help with the smaller service jobs and stuff like that, the service positions. So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what would you say to someone, or how do you encourage them to help?
Just since I spoke, and especially with that last question, I owe several people here with us tonight amends as to how badly I spin every conceivable possible disaster in the future. And as I think about this, I think it originally was a defense mechanism. If I can imagine every possible disaster, and then I've at least thought somewhat about what would I do to save myself so I'm better prepared. And I really need to learn to not be so rude as to share it all with people, because they don't need to be freaked out. So anyway, I have a list of amends to do. And I just, as to the second question, it just, as I think back, so, you know, as I said, there's no obligation. Sadly, we can't say, look, this position needs to be filled, and eeny, meeny, miny, mo, Joe, you're going to do it. We don't do that. So what can we do? And what we can do is, I guess in a gross sense, brag about how much fun and how much recovery I get out of fill the blank, in the hopes that people are going to say, oh, I would like some of that. That sounds like fun. Maybe I'll volunteer for whatever it is. We have to do attraction. And it seems to me that the way we attract is by sharing how much we have grown, how, in my case, fears have been dissipated, you know, all the things that benefit getting out of our rabbit hole of recovery and, you know, passing it forward, participating, being a part of, you know? So yeah, anything that, you know, positive comment, however small, about service, hopefully will be encouraging. That's my thought.
Thanks, Andrew. Ricky, would you be go ahead and share a couple minutes on the topic?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ricky. This fear of failure, fear of success, I started to think about it when Maureen asked if I would share. And I realized that the way I grew up, I didn't dare feel fear. I mean, I didn't dare not do what I was told to do. And I didn't dare feel X or Y, and especially fear, because I was frequently in very fearful situations. So for the longest time, these two things made no sense to me. You know what I mean? Fear of failure. You fail. Boom. Fear of success. You succeed. I mean, it's just, they weren't real. The fear part of it wasn't real. But a couple of things were said to me. Now, the first one I'm going to say was not somebody in the program. Said I had a superiority complex to hide my feeling of inferiority. So I had this arrogant bravado so that I wouldn't show my feeling of inferiority. But one time I also say I'm a golfer and my average score is 90. And this one day I'm out there. I mean, I don't know. I don't play golf, but I'm shooting 100 and I'm going, oh, that's terrible. So, you know, I'm going to start shooting better. Or if I start shooting a 72, which is par, I'm going to say, I'm not that good, so I'll start muffing the next few shots. So we each have our own little what we think of ourselves. And if we do too well or too poorly, we can beat ourselves up. It doesn't matter which side of that, what we think we are capable of doing. And that's really what I got out of the program. Was my willingness to succeed, without staying on that whatever was my par number before. So I try not to do fear. I mean, it was just so beat out of me so early in life, so I have to look at it, you know, around from other directions. And service is the one, but the first time that I did muff up a job, it was like, oh, that was kind of funny. You know, I mean, I immediately saw how funny what I had done was. And that was so good to be able to laugh at myself. So getting rid of the fear and laughing at myself was a big piece of my program recovery. Thanks.
Thanks, Ricky. I appreciate you sharing. The next question I was going to ask is, how has your service work helped you become more flexible in your program, relationships, and other aspects of your life? So how has service helped you become more flexible? And let's see, I think we'll go with Debbie.
When I was preparing my talk, I was thinking about the jobs that I have had, not in service, but in my quote unquote career, because most of my life I was a stay-at-home mom. But then when they grew up, I did have a little career as a pharmacy technician. And I was very good at it because it was very task-oriented. So if you give me a task, I love the most tedious, boring tasks. I just love doing that repetition. I want a task in service that I can kind of just whiz through, that it's just something I can do. And some of the positions, I've had to learn to be a little more patient with other people. I've needed to be kind when people ask questions that I think are stupid. You know, and it's like, were you not listening to what we were just discussing? You know, And I don't really, I shouldn't have said stupid, that they somehow missed that and they're asking it again. And I just, you know, and I have learned from other people that it doesn't always turn out the way you like it to turn out. And so I don't know. I think that I have learned to be more patient with people since I was so good mechanically or with tasks. I had a hard time dealing with people. I wasn't as tactful or as patient. And so I've learned a lot of flexibility because people gave me that flexibility. I don't know why they didn't ask me to leave meetings in the beginning, because I was always complaining about this, that, and the other thing. And you know, so people cut me some slack. So I'm learning as I mature into a reasonable adult. I'm learning that we're not all at the same space in the same space of time. And I find that especially helpful in dealing with sponsees. You know, I want them to work a program like I'm working a program, you know, and I have to remember that I'm not trying to get them to work my program. They're working their own program at their own pace with their own higher power. And so that's probably the option of service that has taught me the most flexibility to let go and let God.
Thanks, Debbie. Hannah, how would you answer that one?
Can you repeat that question again,
Maureen? Sure. How has your service work helped you become more flexible in your program, relationships, and other aspects of your life?
What's coming up for me is I remember a service position that I was in charge of, and someone who wanted to have it done a certain way, and it wasn't the way that I was choosing to do it, and in studying the literature and kind of doing some research and with help from my sponsor, you know, I was able to say that, you know, I since I am a trusted servant, I can choose to do it this way. And if someone else takes over the position, they may do it this way. Now, I think that service is, you know, very much like the groups, is that there's guidance and there's the traditions, and but there's some room for some autonomy as long as you don't affect it as a whole. You know, that there is some flexibility that you know, I can choose to serve in this position, and then that has really helped me be able to let other people do positions in their way. And, you know, sometimes I can say it's an outside issue. I don't have any opinion on that. And sometimes I have an opinion on that, but the program has helped me go, keep your mouth shut because it's none of your business. They're doing it the best they can. And that's the flexibility that we get in this program. I would say sponsorship too. That service position really stretches me because trying to, you know, what I heard was brilliant from someone who was a long timer and said, my job as a sponsor is to carry the message, not the person. And so I really have to, you know my boundaries and know my job service position as a sponsor. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a caretaker. I'm not your Uber or, you know, whatever. So that has helped me to be flexible, but not flexible to the point where it's unhealthy and I'm overstepping. So Okay. I don't know if that made sense, but yeah, that's what came up.
I thought it did. And you know what? That was your thoughts. So that's the way it works, right? Andrew, you started. We're going to finish up with you. We're just about out of time. So something real quick.
Yeah, I think I have become aware of how I am and am not flexible. So I think in most ways, I would like to think that in most ways, I'm very flexible. God knows I grew up being very agreeable. And, you know, I was the guy that went along with everything. But I have noticed in service that when something in my understanding is not correct, then I am very inflexible, which is not a good thing. And so that's the awareness that I'm having. And thankfully, those are very few things. But I so kind of both ways. And but I think I'm very good, as someone mentioned, when it comes time to hand it over to someone else. You know, if it goes to Joe and Joe decides that, you know, we're all going to wear party hats, whatever. So I'm very flexible in that sense. But as I think about this, I can think about some very specific things that I've come across where it's like, no, this is a black and white situation, and I'm very inflexible. So interesting. And maybe I need to work on that. Interesting.
Food for thought. All right. Yeah. Well, we are done. It was great questions and very insightful answers. So I'm going to go ahead and turn that over to Mike so he can finish us up. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Maureen. Let's give a nice round of applause again to our speakers, and also to Maureen for being the moderator, and for Matt and Floanne as our tech support people. So thank you very much. We could not do it by ourselves. We have a team that works on this, and it's a great team to work with. And thank all of you all for coming as well. Our audience.
Yay.
So I hope you will join us on Saturday. We have three more speakers on Saturday, May the 15th, starting at 10 a.m. That is Arizona time, which is Mountain Standard Time. We do not go on daylight savings time. So it's the same as the West Coast at 10 o'clock time. And we hope to see you there for some more great perspectives on celebrating our successes. Fear of success, fear of failure. We'll have Melody G, Susan S, and Phil B as our speakers. And once again, thank you for joining us today. Thank you very much.